Okay, we thought that we ought to be certain, because that was the request that came to us, that you understand the connection between healthcare, this healthcare presentation for this week, and the theme. We didn't gerrymander this so that it would come out that way, but we definitely think there is a connection between healthcare and no longer strangers. And so, if you'll see this with me, and I'm going to read it with you a little bit, because I understand that it's a little bit hard because the whiteboard reflects here. So what we've said is, this is the theme, and this is our series, and it says that the ethic of Christian love, agape, which we all know, has caused our religion to be the universal leader in taking a holistic, which, for those of you who don't like medical terms or the jargonese that goes along with our profession, simply means whole, a holistic approach to the quality of human life. Thus, we think, and this is the theme of what we're going to be saying in much of what we share with you, we think that individuals, congregations, communities where Christians live, and the institutions, both government and private, that they support, should reflect not a stranger or a standoff, oh, that's somebody else's problem, relationship with those in need of health care, but it should reflect one of compassion and concern, concern and compassion. So that's the theme. That's the theme of who we are. That's the theme of people ask me many times, well, you left the pastoral ministry and you went into healthcare administration. They don't see the connection. And I didn't think that there was any contradiction there whatsoever. In fact, I thought there was a natural flow of ministry in a different direction. And so as a result, it seemed to be, to me, to be a natural thing to do. And I know that Leah shares that. So today we want to talk about, we said in the, what was our title, Leah?
911, Help Me Understand Healthcare.
So we thought, well, when you come to, we didn't think that there would be this many healthcare professionals here, quite honestly. When you come to Holden, we thought, well, we'd have a cross-section of people. And so as a result, we thought that we ought to work through the healthcare delivery system by way of explanation so that we're all on the same page. And tomorrow at 10:30, when the second section, session begins, then we'll get into some of the more in-depth things. But we want to talk today about some things that some of you may know about. The good doctor that's with us, nurses, EMT people, those sorts of things. But we want to have a common denominator, a common knowledge about the healthcare system. And so we're going to be talking about that this afternoon. I'm going to start out and talk a little bit about who delivers healthcare. And it's an amazing thing, even in the 26, 27 years since I received my advanced degree in healthcare administration, the proliferation of professions in our field. And so we want to talk about and just identify those people a little bit so that later on you'll see how it fits into subsequent presentations. You'll see how those all it all comes together. And my assignment, until Leah has her chance to talk about some the institutions and the services, I want to talk about the professions, first of all. Doctor, will you tell me, please, did you study your rehabilitative medicine right out of medical school, or did you were you grandfathered into it, or how about telling the group how you became a rehab physician?
I trained initially in internal medicine and rheumatology, which is a subspecialty of internal medicine dealing with arthritis, and went to Salem, Oregon and practiced for 3 years, during which time I wasn't all that happy with that type of practice, and one day went to Portland to give a talk on osteoarthritis. And right after my talk at this particular seminar, two people in my present specialty gave a talk, and I made the decision then and there that I would go into rehabilitation medicine.
Good. A physician. We have a... If we put up on the board here, do you have any particular medical specialty that you're interested in right now, or are you just trying to get into medical school?
No, rural family medicine.
Family medicine. All right. If we put up on the board, we'll just put the big words MD up here, and most people say, particularly those who have not been in the healthcare field, they say, well, I want to see my doctor. And these days, that's not good enough, is it? But we can say maybe the basis of family or the doctor that you see initially are these two. Most physicians that you see that do general practice, walk in the doctor's office, be assessed for what's wrong with you, are either family physicians or internal medicine people. And they are specialties. In fact, even in the short time that I have been in the field, there is no general practice physician anymore. All physicians are what we call board certified something or others. So they're either family practice, internal medicine, and then we could list here, let's start at the top of the head. What's the physician that's interested in your brain?
Psychiatrist.
Why? Well, I want to do the psychiatry bit, okay? All right. Psychiatrist. How about the guy that operates on your brain?
Neurosurgeon.
Neurosurgeon, probably, yeah. How about the guy that looks in your ears? Yeah.
Or the woman.
Yeah, thank you.
Learning experience.
Okay. Yes. How about the person?
There you go.
How about the person?
Doctor. How about the doctor?
Doctor that looks in your ears. What are we going to call him or her? A what?
Otolaryngologist.
Is that that's a mouthful, isn't it? An otolaryngologist. Remember when we used to have all the old ENT people, and they used to do everything from the brain on down, this? Now we have otolaryngologists. And what do we have for the name of a physician who's only interested in your throat? Or your thoracic surgeon might be. How about the guy who's interested in your lungs? Pulmonologist. How about the guy that's interested in your stomach? Gastroenterologist. How about the guy who, well, he usually takes, how about the guy who's located in your, or interested in your private things? Urologist. How about the guy who's interested in your circulation? Or gal?
Cardiologist.
Well, the point about this is, and we just want to expose you to those names and expose you to the idea that physicians come in all kinds of brands, all kinds of specialties, and all kinds of particular expertise. And there is no place than in this beloved land of ours where we have more specialties, and some people think that's a plus and some people think it's a minus, but isn't it interesting that people are flocking to the United States if they really want health care? Expert health care. All right. Under well, the same thing's happened to nursing, hasn't it?
Yes.
We no longer just have nurses, and we even have a few male nurses. We have nurses. Nurses, tell us some of the specialty nurses that we run into these days.
Well, you have psychiatric nurses and surgical nurses and people that work in the operating room and emergency nurses. It's
And what's the latest nurse that is in ascendancy today that you and I may see and that we should be oftentimes happy to see?
Nurse practitioner.
We used to think that the doc was so busy he passed us, she passed us off to somebody else. Now the nurse practitioner may be exactly the person that we want to see, because the best utilization of your time and his or her time is the person, is a nurse practitioner. Anybody else want to mention other nurses?
Visiting nurse.
Ha! Visiting nurse. Talk about our theme.
Parish nurse.
How about that? How many people know about a parish nurse? Do you know about parish nursing? We're going to talk about it this week. Oh, it's an exciting development, that parish nurses. We have one in our congregation, and more churches, particularly in the Midwest, Illinois, Iowa, that area, the parish nurse. Exciting position. Well, we don't want to leave out all kinds of other people that are delivering professional care. So we had some here, EMTs. Know that? Are those words? Emergency medical technicians. Okay? The people very frequently, unless you live in a university town or in a teaching hospital town where there are resident physicians, but very often the people that you'll meet on the ambulance if it comes to your house. Highly trained people. People who know how to do things. How about other people that we should talk about as far as that identify? We have a massage person up here. Oh boy, if you ever played college athletics as I did, or doctor, you probably know about massage people. This is a specialty. This is something that professional football teams, for instance, pay big bucks to have these people around.
For sport medicine.
Yes!
With the docs in the room, you hate to say it, the chiropractic.
Well, I'm not so certain with the training that that chiropractors have these days that all doctors don't think that there is a role for a chiropractor to play. And how about podiatrists? A podiatric medicine person, one who takes care of your feet? A trained, highly trained physician?
Naturopath.
Pardon me?
How about naturopath? Naturopath.
I don't know that.
Naturopathy?
Yes. Naturopathy? No, tell me about that.
Well, they prescribe herbs and things like that.
Oh, yes. Well, because I've been on the other side.
How about acupuncture? Acupuncture.
Acupuncture. Well, we can go on and on, and we want to use our time best. All we're saying is that in this highly complex society in which we live, one of the concerns that we have, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow, is accessing health care, getting to the right person in order that good things happen to you. Leah's going to talk about I've tried to, and by our own admission, this is a survey course. This is not an in-depth course, and it's, we've tried to just touch on some of these things. But of course, one of the things that we do in our society is that we sometimes feel like as we come to Holden, we don't have to come to Holden to be regenerated spiritually, but we come to a place. And the same thing happens as far as healthcare is concerned. And there's healthcare places and there's healthcare services. And so Leah's going to talk next to you about services.
Okay. It's a hard discussion to have in some way, because
there are as many as you saw healthcare professionals who could go around and keep coming up with idea after idea after idea on the different professions. Well, as you probably all have been aware, there's as many places to access healthcare. Tomorrow we're going to talk specifically about accessing healthcare when you're sick or something's wrong, what to do, where to go. Today, again, you have to excuse us because many of you, we did not expect such a sophisticated crowd. Many of you are going to be aware of this. But what I'm going to try to do is to lay out a spectrum. And then I'm going to also talk a little bit about the reform, the way we're changing our thinking about where to get healthcare. Some of that is also about who to provide or who should provide healthcare to us. An acupuncturist maybe instead of a traditional physician. That also will change depending on where we go to get our health care. But I'm going to draw a typical graph here to try to get across two notions to you at the same time, make it a little bit more visual and interesting rather than just listing out a bunch of healthcare institutions. There's an expression in healthcare called acuity. High or low acuity, what we're really talking about is how sick are you? What kind of serious position are you in? And if we talk about the highest level of acuity, the reason, again, we're giving you some of these terms is that when we may say this later on in the week, we won't have to go back and hopefully and leave any of you out. But one of the highest acuity things that might happen to you is that you might think you're having a heart attack. Pretty much this is recognized by the professional community is that you need to get care and you need to get care very quickly, all right? Nobody's gonna look down on you for going to the ER, for instance, at a hospital. Most likely your managed care plan or whoever you may belong to is gonna say, get to a hospital as fast as you can. So we'll put on one level how sick you are, what might happen. On the other level, the institution or place you should get care. So this is sort of the highest level acuity institution. So you should head off to an ER. Well, if you all read the paper, or you probably get your benefits packages, you realize that ERs are not any longer a place of choice. They want to keep you out of the ER. It's expensive. They don't want people there with earaches, sore throats. It's not the right place to get care. It's just too much care, too high of a bill. So as we move down, for instance, say you either cut or dislocate your finger. There's a lot of people who believe you shouldn't go to the ER for this. In the past, people used to go there. Well, not anymore. You're going to find that some people think you should go to an urgent care center. Maybe the ER, depending if you've really cut it off, but depending on what's available to you or the area you live in, maybe it's not quite as severe. Might say that it's still ER or urgent care. Urgent care is sometimes sort of negatively referred to as doc in a box. You might have heard that expression. And that's because they are often positioned in suburban areas or places where it's real easy to access. You don't necessarily have to go to a hospital. So as we go down this, you may know people who are getting chemotherapy. This is a very serious condition. People with cancer, they're going under, they're very sick, they may be going under a lot of radiation, but most likely it's scheduled. You don't all of a sudden find out you have to have chemotherapy and you're in an hour. So what sometimes you can consider this is part of hospital care, but it's scheduled, and most likely you're gonna find that it's what is sort of called minimal chronic care. Because you're in the hospital for longer term, but you schedule yourself and you get in.
It has to be close. Thanks.
They can't see me.
Okay.
So all of this is going to be hospital care. All right? So that's chemotherapy. Continue down the line. How about babies being born? Not maybe quite as scheduled. You might not know exactly when that's going to happen. You still most likely will check into a hospital, but there are other options these days. Some people have midwives. They stay at home. Some people might get stuck in the back of a cab. You never really know where. But most likely, babies are born in the hospital still. And most likely, you'll have set up an arrangement with your physician, know where you're going, and it's still hospital care. The interesting thing about this, as you're probably all aware, that Congress has, you know, legislated, is how fast or how long people get to stay in the hospitals anymore. And insurance companies wanted people out. It's too expensive. And we've had some legislative action to keep people in at least for 24 hours to 48 hours if they want. So again, we're kind of working through, this is med-surg, medical surgical wards or obstetric wards. But again, this is hospital considered acceptable hospital care. And if we go down here, things like surgeries, planned surgeries, hernia surgeries, most likely we're starting to get into questionable areas where people use hospitals. As the advent of outpatient clinics, outpatient surgery, and outpatient visits, whatever, some of these surgeries are now no longer considered acceptable for hospitals. They think that it's too intensive service, and instead they can move you out, take care of you from, say, 7 a.m., you check in, get your care, and they discharge you by 5, all right? And then, I think it was interesting to have as many people talk about alternative therapies as they did, as well as the fact that we're going to talk about some chronic maintenance care. This means that maybe you were in the hospital for surgery or chemotherapy, and no longer you need hospital care, again, too intense. This is where visiting nurses, home health has absolutely taken off. As insurance plans, again, we'll talk a little bit more about this in our third session about exactly who pays for your care, whether it be Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance. As people want to pay less and less because it's getting so expensive, what they're going to do is often try to push you out of the hospital in a shorter time frame and get you into either home health, visiting nurse associations, whatever the case is, so that you can have care at home. An interesting statistic about that is they figure, it's pretty hard to get your finger on, but they figure about one-third of deaths in hospitals are preventable because of the amount of infections and infectious diseases in hospitals, which if you calculate it up, that makes that hospital deaths the number one killer in America. So it's a pretty depressing statistic, which is a lot of reason why people say, get me out, get me into my own bed, have a nurse come by for 2 hours a day, bathe me, help me get some food, but otherwise I'm probably better off being at home. And then there's various other sicknesses or levels of acuity, very low level acuity. You might go for a well physical, you might have a touch of the flu, and at this point people start using their own judgment. And a lot of this is now where we see a boom in all sorts of care, whether it be these urgent care centers. Your child's sick in the middle of the night. Instead of going to the emergency room, they may go to an urgent care center. You may go, increasingly we have pharmaceuticals that are allowed to be sold over the counter. You may sell what that's sort of called the self-medicate. You may decide, this is wrong with me, I need to get these pills and you take care of it yourself. You may wait and purely just go to your doctor's office, schedule an appointment. There's a lot of controversy in this area, and we're going to talk about this very low level of acuity, because it is in here that people project where our most savings or our most money is either spent or wasted. And we'll talk about this because it also varies greatly by your race, your gender, your age. You can either spend a lot of money in here or not very much. If you choose to wait, people have bad access. They wait until they're very, very sick. And then, the reason I drew this graph, so basically this is sort of the spectrum we're working on. This is very expensive up here. And if we don't properly spend the amount of attention down here on keeping people in low-level institutions that are less expensive, when we have a lot of smaller illnesses that we can take care of for lower levels, this is really where our money can be better spent. And we have traditionally in America worked at this kind of a system. We throw the best technology, the highest level of care, the most expensively trained people to make people better. But we often aren't addressing what is considered a holistic need down in this area and keeping people well, okay? This also gets into the idea a little bit about managed care. And that managed care has tried to get us out of this model in philosophy, if the appropriate philosophy is used for managed care, there's a lot of anger about managed care these days, and again, we'll talk about that in a subsequent session. But the anger is that the managed care institution was supposed to keep me well. They will benefit by expending a lot of little pieces of money to keep me well, rather than waiting until I'm very, very sick and putting me into the ER at high-level hospital care. And we'll talk about whether that's been effective, whether that's working. There's an awful lot of good research and statistics being done right now to find out whether that's actually happening or whether we're not doing either. We're keeping people out of the ER and maybe not giving them the care they need here either. Okay? And we'll get into that when we have a session specifically on that. So, through all my scribbling, I hope you realize that there's plenty of places we can get care. There's a whole different range of sicknesses and seriousness of sickness that we have, and that most likely there's appropriate places to access, or in essence to go to get services. And with that in mind, much of our discussion is going to be about how to serve sort of our community better with a limited number of resources and making sure that they see the appropriate people, like all of the different people in here that have been on staff somewhere, for their whatever their sickness is.
Thanks, Leah. Sort of as a trailer on here, we're not going to forget it, and some of you may be here specifically for that reason. We hope that you'll come to all of our sessions. And to talk about that, because one of our real concerns and one of my subspecialties, if you will, is geriatric care. And we have the demographic situation in the United States and to a certain extent around in all Western countries, where we are seeing an increasing number of elderly people. And the question is, what are we going to do with them? Are we going to, as Leah has said, place them somehow or other in an institutional setting? Are we going to follow the old model of years gone by, where they move in with the younger generation and have an apartment someplace in the house or a room in the house? What is an acceptable care pattern, not only financial but compassionately? What is a manner in which we can care for our elderly so that, believe it or not, you think this is an appropriate sentence, that they are no longer strangers. That sometimes the elderly, the very person that gave me birth, is now a stranger to me. She or he is a stranger because they may not even remember me. Because of their Alzheimer's, because of their dementia, because they were reared at a different time and a different place. But how can the ones, isn't it interesting that some of our predecessor cultures, the Indians, for instance, the Chinese culture, had great reverence for the elderly. And isn't it interesting that the elderly have become a problem for us? And that whether you look at it financially, and it is a financial problem, we who are on Medicare constantly hear the threats about Medicare going to run out of money. And then we hear about the fact that they can't be put in nursing homes because it costs too much money. We're going to be talking about that too. The point, again, is no longer strangers, whether they're elderly, whether they're young, wherever on the acuity level they fall, we're trying to talk, as Leah has said, we're trying to talk not only financially, we're talking about appropriateness of care. Now, that's the formal presentation. We have other things we can say. Leah and I are very interested in hearing from you now, because we have, of course, done our outlining work. But we want to have a reflection back from you now to tell us some of the things so that we can structure the subsequent sessions of this series so that you know, or you can tell us. Yes?
And two comments. Because of our couple of deaf community members who are here, please raise your hand very specifically so we can pick out your voice easier than they can see who's speaking. So please raise your hand and allow a bit of space. Don't interrupt each other so that our translator, Grace, has the chance to catch up. And secondly, I hope that you won't find it too dismissive if we have questions, that sometimes we table it maybe to a day more appropriate and we're going to specifically speak to that day.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
One of the things that I haven't heard and that I have real concern about is preventive medicine. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That, you know, I'm fortunate. I have an insurance policy that, you know, I get free aqua aerobics and, you know, those kinds of things. And then there's want to sell me policies that don't have that. And it's hard for me to weigh, you know, but I don't see preventive medicine in that corner there where I think it should
yeah.
be.
It's on our agenda, but okay. Thank you for bringing it to our attention, because Leah's making notes about these, and we will be sure to address that. Are there others who have preventative components that they know about to their insurance policies?
It's becoming a more popular
right.
thing, again, to keep people well, weight control, no smoking programs, things like that, too.
How about mine buying me an exercise bicycle? Is that pretty much of a commitment to keep you well? Okay, yes, ma'am.
What I was just going to say, that's a misnomer from the standpoint of being health care. It's illness care.
Yes.
And the health care should be an
that's
opposite
right.
reflective graph that has to do with,
that's right.
the formal part that insurance companies will pay for, and the ones that are out of pocket money are for the prevention component.
Yep. When we,
and
we
just
have
as much money spent in that arena as is in the other.
Absolutely. We are doing a session called Who's in Charge of Your Health, because we both have very much an agreement with you on that we expect our healthcare institutions or industry to take care of our health, or in essence, take care of our illness, whereas we're shifting more towards personal responsibility to stay well. And I agree with you, that's a very important part.
We kind of tried to put it
it's
into
hard to
here.
Put into institutions.
And said
it's
something
happening.
About being responsible for as individuals for ourselves. But a good point, and we do that. Yes, sir.
In your opinion, you talked about appropriateness of health care.
Yes, sir.
In your opinion, do we as Christians and the church have a different definition of that than the secular world? If so, what would it be?
Well, I'm going to give you the short answer, and the long answer is going to come out over the series, okay? I say that the answer is yes. I say that the emphasis on the spiritual dimension in health care, preventative care, the emphasis that we put on the spiritual dimension, having worked in both church-related and non-church-related government. My first hospital was a government-owned hospital. And when I see the emphases that are that existed in those two institutions, I say that, yeah, I guess what we're trying to say is that as Christians, whether we have a professional role in it or we're on a community board, ma'am, the HMO, we have no lockstep a formula to give you at the end of this week that as Christians you got to go out and do this and do that. I guess we're trying to ask you to catch a spirit here so that you witness to your Christian faith in what you do for yourself and for the community, so that yes, there is a difference because we're Christians.
Well, that word holistic really heads in that direction.
Yes.
That health. That there's lots more than just the medicinal side of health.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to make a comment about that.
Sure.
My mother, she has Alzheimer's, and she stayed at home for about 3 years after she began having serious problems, and she was managed with home health. and everything. And finally, we had no choice but to have her go to a nursing home. And it is, I'm proud to say, Renbed Board of Lutheran Board of Ministries.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirit.
Let me interrupt. Where?
Chisago City, Minnesota.
Yes, okay.
And they have a full-time chaplain there. And you can just feel that spiritual dimension there. It's I've never seen it in my whole nursing career, which is really quite long. But I just wanted to make that comment, that it's made her real comfortable.
And there's no apology for it, is there? That spirit being there.
No.
Because that's what the institution is dedicated to.
It seemed to be, I know that they're a little short of help and everything, but they walk around, they touch her, or they touch all the patients when they go by, you know, just to make sure that they acknowledge their presence.
Mm-hmm.
And the chaplain has made a connection, and they called me up, and it just has made all the difference. So I wish there were a lot more of that around in healthcare, because I worked in a state-owned facility, and boy, pay the chaplain, they really resented that. They resented anything that had to do with spiritual dimension.
Well, that's a whole question, of course, that ranges from what this pastor thinks is a mistaken notion of separation of church and state in America. And I believe the Constitution, if you reread it, says that they shall not establish a religion. It does not say they should be anti-religion. At the same time, I understand the dilemma of the government of the United States of America, with as multifaceted as our religious scene is today. Quite honestly, I don't want prayer being forced upon my grandchildren now if it's led by a Jehovah's Witness.
No, but the nursing home my mother's in, and a Muslim could be perfectly happy there, because it doesn't take that kind of it's not that kind of a pushing religion down anybody's throat. It's just the spiritual caring, you know.
Okay, other questions? Doctor, I wanted to ask you a question. Yes, ma'am.
Well, just some ethical issues that I have around for-profit organizations, and where the concern and compassion is born out of marketing motivation rather than or patient satisfaction surveys, rather than from an etiology that has a Christian etiology.
And
where the struggle is for a healthcare worker.
We're going to do a thing on ethics.
And also, that will be, I'll touch on that specifically, talking about the financing of healthcare under the who pays the bill, because that's a huge issue right now in the healthcare world, that not-for-profits are converting very quickly or being bought by for-profit. And there's some interesting issues, and we'll definitely touch on that.
Good. Okay, yes, sir.
How about when you get to the extreme, when do you stop healthcare?
Yeah. We're having a session on that too.
Well, I mean, it's a serious problem, and I think.
Yes.
It's a big problem.
Yeah.
And especially in our culture.
Jack Kevorkian's not flying in.
Nobody.
We got some thoughts about it.
You can't let anybody die. It's just,
yeah. Well, and that's going to, we're not trying to keep this a sweet session. If there are people who have deep feelings about this, when we get to that issue of leaving this earthly life and how one leaves it, we want people to speak up at that session, because I think that the church is in a little bit of a dilemma right now as to what it should say about that. And are we letting society outpace us with regard to what's happening, and the church is bringing up the rear on the ethics part of it? Or is it time that we made a statement?
Or a better way of describing that is, has our technology outpaced our ethics?
Yeah.
We have the ability to do things, gene splicing, keeping people alive on machines, that as our ethics and morals have not caught up with that. So we'll talk more about that as well.
See, I told you my academic daughter would check up on me through all of this.
Could
Other questions? Yes, we're putting this all together. As we say, we want the subsequent sessions to reflect things that you're... Yes, ma'am.
Can you just give us an overview of when these sessions are...
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing 10:30 tomorrow, and...
Oh, I've got it here. This week, unfortunately, they have us here for 2 weeks, and for those of you who are here for a week, there's just no way we can get 2 weeks of sessions into a week. So unfortunately, some of you may miss some sessions we're doing, and I'm sorry about that. But this week, today's was about the organization institution to give a groundwork. Tomorrow's is about access. We're explaining how to best access and to give you some information about, which I personally think is fascinating, about depending on how you're born into this world, your potential different access to healthcare, unrightly so in most cases, and the financial problems as well for access. That's tomorrow. We have a day off on Wednesday, and then on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we have three sessions in a row. The Thursday one is who's in charge of your health. This again gets back to this issue of what's expected of our healthcare system, and the expression I really like that I've heard is that we have medicalized social behavior. You know, lots of 8-year-old boys on are now called ADD, and they're all taking Ritalin. Is this right? Have we learned something about them, or have we medicalized it? Do we expect rehabilitation in social ways to come through the medical world? We often turn to our medical professions to help fix things in jails and whatever the case is. And so we're going to talk a little bit about who's in charge of your health and the quality of healthcare. Friday's session is who pays the bill. We're going to try to help you understand and discuss the various forms of payment, so specifically Medicare, Medicaid, the private forms of payment, such as HMOs, managed care, but also talk about the for-profit and not-for-profit difference going on, as well as the uninsured. And our country has a huge problem with the uninsured. And then our fifth session this week is the future of healthcare and what's next. We're going to talk a little bit more about, as a community, how do we plan for and be sort of futurists, a little bit of what's coming up in our healthcare world, what can we expect. I'll talk a little bit about things like long-term care insurance, which is a very new concept. But how do we best plan for and get ready for the changes that might be happening, including changes in Medicare and changes in Medicaid that are going on at the government level. So a lot of legislative things that are on the board. Next week, my dad and I are going to split. And as far as I understand...
Well, we've got to talk about that.
Okay.
But yeah, you forgot to mention the forum tomorrow evening.
We do have a forum tomorrow evening, that's right. Maybe you'd like to talk a little bit about it.
We decided we have forums on Tuesday and Thursday because we figured that people would have a lot of interest in this subject. The forum's going to be on access to healthcare. But, you know, more, they're going to talk about how you get in, and probably the forum, I think the idea is what, you know, everybody's stories about how you do or don't.
It's more of just a open discussion.
It's more open conversation. So Leah's going to moderate it. That's what your dad just said. I mean, you know that.
That's what I heard.
Anyway, Leah's going to moderate it, and Dar will be one panelist, and Jim Delane, if you're down there, Jim.
No, he's not.
He's going to be here, but he's a parish pastor in San Francisco, and has a lot of senior population as well as people with AIDS that he knows deals with. And then also Bill Lockhart from the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. Oh, there we go. Is also going to address the matter from that perspective. And they're just like 3-minute presentations. Then you all get to get in on it.
Okay.
So it's open conversation, and it's a wonderful time to get more in on what all this stuff. I'm sorry, I didn't raise my hand, but I was up there high.
Just so that you know, we're not avoiding the subjects. Let me run down next week some of the topics that we're going to, not that they're going to be excluded from our discussions either in the forum or this week, but Leah will be talking about healthcare reform for our children and families, women's health, AIDS, special need population.
Such as the homeless, the Indian service, and mental health.
Okay, and I'm going to be doing...
And then we both do long-term care.
Yeah, and the end of next week, we're going to do long-term care. Again, a session devoted specifically to that. But as have you heard today, somebody wants to ask a question about long-term care, we'll certainly work it in. I'm going to be talking about spirituality and faith next week. I'm going to be talking about pastoral care, chaplains, parish nurses, Stephen ministry, those kinds of things. Roles and relationships of healthcare providers. What's the pastor's relationship to the physician? Ethical issues, a whole session on ethical issues. And then, as Leah said, our final session at the end of the second week will be on long-term care. And so we'll try to work these subjects in, but in order to best utilize dedicating each session this week to, as you heard, access, quality, those sorts of things. We thought as we laid out the course that we could better accomplish what we wanted to do and still give you time to play back to us what you're interested in if we did that kind of thing rather than go all over the map each session and then accomplish nothing. So let me ask the good doctor a question with regard to some of the things that we I asked him about how he got into rehab medicine, but I'd like to ask in the context of our theme, doctor, and there isn't, I'm not putting you on the spot because this wasn't prearranged or anything, I'm just asking you for a reaction about something. And that is the question of our subject for today, and that is how things are organized. What do you see as a Christian doctor practicing in our healthcare institutions today? Difficult to witness to your faith, not so difficult, something you don't deal with. Where do you stand on that particular issue?
I'd say that's putting him on the spot.
And you can say, I don't want to respond. Or you're not comfortable?
No, I'm thinking.
Okay.
I'm thinking. I practice in a not-for-profit community hospital. And my practice is located in the hospital, though I don't just see hospitalized patients. And I don't see that there's a problem in doing that if one wants to. I have a friend who's a dermatologist who does a great deal of that in his practice. He's, of course, in a practice outside. Mm-hmm. But I've never felt any constraint not to...
Okay.
Deal with spiritual issues, and in fact, I will typically inquire about that as part of my taking a history.
Okay, terrific. That's I didn't mean to have a personal witness or anything else. I just meant to see whether that was a problem that you saw, because I think that one of the things that we're going to be trying to do next week is to raise that issue and to validate what our theme is here. And that is that one doesn't, because they're in the healthcare field, have to confront people with their faith, but rather be supportive. And I think that's what our Lord told us in the first place. And I think that that's how we've been the best witness. Some of the best witnesses that I've received when I've been hospitalized has been from certainly somebody who must have been a Christian, whether they be a doctor or a nurse, because their witness was so strong as to their compassion.
I see two problems that happen. One is there are a few physicians in my community who I think do inappropriate witnessing, use the vulnerability of people to place them in a position of making a choice or something. And the other is to not deal with that issue at all. And both of those are wrong, in my opinion.
Thank you for that, those words. We're also punctual in ending. And we're at that end unless we have questions from you that you think we have not dealt with, given the scope of what we said the first session was going to be.